welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of September 24th, 2019. Today we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Miss Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Miss Mariah Tinger?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Very well. So let me set up our discussion a little bit by mentioning a guy by the name of Bill McKibben. You ever heard of Bill McKibben?
Oh, he's my hero.
Bill McKibben. Bill McKibben is a guy in 1989 wrote a book called The End of Nature, which was what they call a seminal book, basically making the point that because of climate change, nature as the Puritans and Nathaniel Hawthorne knew it is long gone. Everything you see is affected by man. Right? That was a depressing thought in 1989. Since then, Bill McKibben has become a leading climate climate leader in determining what the heck we ought to do. And specifically, I mean, in my memory, and Mariah, correct me if I'm wrong, Bill McKibben led the first climate march in something like 2004 from Burlington, Vermont down to Bernie Sanders' office or something, right? A march across Vermont. Subsequently, in 2007, he had formed an organization called 350 because of the 350 parts per million in the atmosphere. And he led in 2007, I think it was April 2007, the first of the big climate events that were distributed pictures everywhere. And then McKibben went on and he did things like organizing the People's Climate March in 2014, which resulted in 400,000 people walking around New York. He was the one who said, he did the do the math idea, which said basically put into the public consciousness the idea that there's more fossil fuel in the ground that's been identified that the oil companies want to burn. There's more there still buried than the atmosphere can absorb. You do the math, you say you must stop, right? He was the one who proposed the divestment schemes. Right? He was the one who said, keep it in the ground. All these buzzwords that we talk about is fundamental to climate. I mean, he was the guy that originated it, right? I mean, is that the correct history?
Yeah, he's really, in a lot of ways, the voice of the action we need for climate change.
Right. And so this, and it's part of his, you know, as a side gig through the years, he has written for The New Yorker. And a lot of this...
Rolling Stones, a lot of his stuff has been in Rolling Stones, too.
Yes. So he's quite an accomplished writer on top of everything else. Used to work at the Boston Globe, lives in, grew up in the Boston area. Anyway, despite the fact that a couple of weeks ago, we were very angry at the New Yorker magazine for publishing a dour and depressing article by a guy named Jonathan Franzen, Bill McKibben wrote an article in The New Yorker this past week, which was much more, I thought, to the point. Right, Mariah? Do you want to put the ball in your court, Mariah? Tell me, what did Bill McKibben, what is the latest masterstroke that Bill McKibben has given us?
Yeah, so with Jonathan Franzen's article, it was this sort of, I don't know if nihilistic is the right word, but it was like, there's nothing we can do. So let's fight some small battles and just understand that, you know, it is coming. Climate annihilation is coming. And, you know, we'll do the best we can to mitigate, but for the most part, we can't avoid it, right? And even Franzen said in some ways, oh, and, you know, from where I am, everything looks normal. And McKibben says some similar things about how dire the situation is, right? There's commonalities there because it is a dire situation. The likelihood of us, you know, most places are already at 1.5 degrees warming, which the IPCC has said we need to try and target. Well, we're kind of already there, and we're headed on fast track for 2 degrees warming, which it means disaster for pretty much all of humankind, at least in terms of life as we know it. And McKibben acknowledges that, and also acknowledges that the political and social obstacles are the biggest ones in our way. But instead of saying, so let's give up and just fight some small battles and wait for it to come. He says, here's a solution. I'm going to present you with an action that actually might work. And it has to do with targeting banking, asset management, and insurance industries and getting them to move away from fossil fuels to create the market shift that we need, right? If you have them leading the way and not funding fossil fuel initiatives, all of a sudden the industry starts to collapse because it doesn't have the finances, the financial backing it needs to persist.
Right. I mean, the oil industry collapses because it can't get the money to build the infrastructure and to do all the bad stuff it wants to do, right?
Right. And I mean, I think we should dive in more deeply into each of these, but I have to say that in thinking about the insurance piece of it was kind of fascinating to me, because in his article in the New Yorker, he says that, you know, first of all, the insurance agencies know better. They are in the job of studying risk, right? That's one of their major roles, is to look into risk management, and they know that the risk is
real,
and they know just how bad the risk is. They were one of the first people to sound the alarm on climate change. Mm-hmm. And if the insurers will not insure some of these, you know, big fossil fuel projects,
like Keystone XL pipeline or the compressor in Weymouth, yeah,
right, the projects can't move forward. You have to have insurance to protect your workers and to protect the project. And so if they decide to not back these projects, the projects don't happen. Plain and simple.
And I think that's what I took from McKibben's article, is that money, and I think that's the name of the article, money is the oxygen of the fossil fuel industry, right? Exxon must have money to continue building things and continue operation. But curiously enough, Exxon and the whole fossil fuel industry is only a tiny portion of the finance, in the like Citibank or these enormous, enormous banks, right? And so McKibben's drawing a distinction between the fossil fuel industry, which we want to divest from and shut down, yada, yada, yada. But he's saying one way to do that is to look at the financial industry, which is to say banks, asset managers like BlackRock and these derivative funds, and the insurance industry. And that, I mean, if you just take 2008 as an example, right, you know, over the course of about a week, trillions of dollars changed hands, right? When you're talking about big money, things can happen really, really fast. And what McKibben is saying is that if the enormous banks that are too big to fail in the United States simply said that they were not going to finance fossil fuel interests, the fossil fuel interests would die. And the banks would continue because the banks are bigger, but fossil fuel would go away. So isn't that an interesting thin edge of the way? And a quick way to turn off the oil companies, right?
Yeah, and you know, he has an interesting line where he says that it's possible to imagine these industries, given that the world is now in existential danger, quickly jettisoning their fossil fuel businesses. He says it's not easy to imagine because capitalism is not noted for surrendering sources of revenue. And then he says, but then the Arctic ice sheet is not noted for melting, right? So yes, this is all sort of different than what we've done before. And we have a different sort of idea and request here, but we're also in a different time where the climate is changing. And so we need to change. I think... It's important to point out too, though, that he notes, rightfully so, in the article. I mean, he's interviewed all kinds of folks to put this article together thoughtfully, and he notes that there's the stranded assets that would be left behind could create sort of a $20 trillion carbon bubble that exceeds the housing bubble that sparked the 2008 financial crisis. And so,
and Mariah, if I just interrupt, when we say stranded assets in this instance, what we mean is, correct me if you think I'm wrong, what they mean is that there are identified fossil fuel assets that are buried in the ground that have not yet been extracted, that the fossil fuel companies claim as part of their corporate value. Right.
Yeah,
so Exxon
exactly.
says, I'm $80,000 billion because I get all this oil under the Arctic I'm going to go get in the future. But if it turns out they can't get that oil in the future, then that's stranded, and all of a sudden Exxon looks much less valuable, right? So that's the source of the bubble.
Right. It's the what James Hansen has said, that, you know, if we burn it, it will be game over for the climate.
Right.
We have to leave that stuff in the ground, the coal, gas, and oil. So McKibben notes that if we were just to sort of, you know, pull out of all of that, that could be, it could lead to sort of a similar crisis to the 2008 financial crisis.
I mean, if the banks just walked away from Exxon.
Right, exactly. Just quickly, immediately, it would work. It would stop, you know, it would keep all that stuff in the ground, but it could be sort of a mess, a big mess. And so he suggests maybe that some of these banks might first announce that they were ending loans for the expansion of the fossil fuel industry, mm-hmm. while continuing to extend credit for ongoing operations, and then slowly sort of pull that out. But he does go on to say that, you know, even if bursting this bubble does short-term damage to the economy, that damage pales next to the kind of wreckage forecast for the planet if the fossil fuel industry continues on its current path.
Right.
I think the damage that they're predicting, you know, if it continues, it's, they said, $551 trillion in damage, which is more money than exists on the planet.
Yeah. Yes. So, I mean, it's cheap to, well, I guess the analogy that keeps floating in my head, which I like, and it has to do with the financial, the bank players, right? And of course, there's what McKibben talks about is banks, asset managers, which manage pension funds and insurance companies. But if you just think about the banks for a minute, all of the banks all of them know that in the future, carbon is going to be constrained, right? So those values are not going to be what they are today. And there's some metaphor of saying that the banks are playing a game of musical chairs, right? Everyone wants to keep making money from the oil industry, even though they know it's a bubble. As long as the music's playing, they're all going to keep dancing and dancing and dancing. And the first time that one of the big banks says, no, we're no longer going to fund fossil fuel because it's too much risk, all the other banks are going to follow that. They're all going to be trying to get an available chair when the music stops. So to push that metaphor, you know, and that's his point, is that if the banks start to move away from the fossil fuel industry, it's going to be fast, and it's going to be very, very influential on, you know, carbon emissions. It'll have a big consequence for carbon emissions.
Yeah. He calls it like lemmings. Right. The lemmings that they all just do what everybody else does.
And I think I think it's a fascinating idea. I mean, it's really this, to my mind, is the sort of equivalent of the intellectual framework that was around the do the math, keep it in the ground, the divestment. I mean, it is a distillation of these ideas, which are kind of floating around in the zeitgeist, to use a big word, right? It's not like a big shock, but when someone finally says it, and McKibben is very good at finally saying it, it becomes crystal clear that the quickest way to shut down Exxon is to deny them new funding. And the way to deny them more money is by somehow shaming the big banks, either shaming or through regulation or through reputational damage to the big banks, so they stop putting money into fossil fuels.
Right. And, you know, at some point you have to recognize, if you have a bunch of investments that you're hoping will make you money, but they're all predicated on something that's destined to fail, right? As we stated before, there's a whole bunch of stranded assets in coal, oil, gas. All of these fossil fuels have to be left in the ground by decree of the Paris Climate Agreement, right? We cannot burn these if we want to have a habitable planet for the next 75 years. And so
Mother Nature decreed that, right? That's
exactly.
Physics.
Exactly. I mean, it's the law of physics, right? And so how could it possibly be a sound business investment to be putting your money in a place that has to fail?
Right.
They have to fail. I mean, it's not, maybe it will take way longer than it should, and by the time it happens, it will be too late. But no matter what, they have to fail. And so I think everybody generally knows that this fossil fuel era is going to come to an end sooner or later. But if you have these big, you know, banks and asset managers pulling back, it's going to send a signal that it's sooner. It's happening now.
In one of the, McKibben plays out the scenario in the asset management. So again, he talks about banks, right, that lend money. There's asset managers that manage pension funds, right? And then there's insurance companies. If you just think about the asset managers that manage pension funds, if they, by some mechanism, start to move away from the purchase of Exxon stock, the way McKibben described it, he talked to, you know, somebody gave the scenario that once BlackRock moves away from Exxon funds, those shares begin to drop, and the money that was in those things goes into renewable energy because that is attractive. And so you have this virtuous flow out of the fossil fuel industry into the renewable energy space. And the countries that have a lot of fossil fuel interests, like Saudi Arabia, they go down. But other countries that want to be investing in renewable energies, say, you know, in less developed countries, they get a boom because money comes in to build the renewable energy systems. So it's kind of this virtuous cycle of selling off the fossil fuel stocks by these huge pension funds. For example, you know, for example, somebody like BlackRock could manage the California state government retiree pension fund, right? That's billions and billions and billions of dollars in a pension fund for the California retirees. To the extent that that fund divests itself of fossil fuel money, right, that's a big deal, right? And that is a good, you know, pushes money out of the fossil fuel industry and into renewables. So
And just to put another point on that, the 4/5 of the world's population lives in nations that currently pay to import fossil fuels. And so their economies would benefit as the, you know, financing would allow them to transition to low cost solar and wind power. So
which would presumably be built on their own property.
Well. Yeah, exactly. Right.
And so, I mean, and then finally, he talks, as we started talking about the insurance companies, the third big leg of this triad of finance people. Basically, as we said earlier, if you can't finance Keystone XL, then it's not going to happen, right? Not finance, I'm sorry. If you can't insure something like Keystone XL, it's not going to happen. And that, so by for the insurance industry to back out of insuring fossil fuel projects would really slow things down around the world, right?
Yeah.
And so what all that brings in the question is, okay, what do you do about it? So Bill McKibben has this brilliant idea. What do you do about it? And I guess the equivalent would be to the divestment movement, right? So the divestment movement went into college campuses and basically tried to get colleges to divest. In similar ways, I can see movements where there's public shaming of the big banks and the big insurance companies and whatnot over the fact that they continue to invest in fossil fuels, and that what is it McKibben call it, the social license, right? That these you look at these
social license to operate.
Well, you look at these big banks. Say, oh, it's a big bank. They must be doing good things. Yeah, okay. Once you start pointing out the nasty stuff they're doing, then that they don't get so much freedom to go do these things. So simply by talking about it is a good first step. McKibben points out that you can always transfer your money into into a more virtuous savings and loan in your hometown. That's true. But I'm just interested to see how the concept that he's proposing, which I think is a great one, how that comes to be actually implemented, right? How the movement goes after these big finance companies to try to get them to change their behavior. Right?
So he puts together an example of Seattle, where there's a lot of money and a lot of environmentalists, he says, and that it's been a sort of a testing ground for some efforts, and that 2 years ago there was a civil disobedience where a group of people shut down 13 Chase branches for the better part of a day. And the reason they targeted Chase branches is because JP Morgan Chase is basically the number one financier of fossil fuel. They are the biggest funder of fossil fuel initiatives. And so with Bank of America and Wells Fargo and Citibank not far behind. And so in Seattle, these people went in and they put in a big inflatable pipeline through the lobby of Chase's headquarters and then staged a black-clad human oil spill.
The idea of, you know, you take off your shirt, you got a black undershirt on, you lie down on the floor, and you have this sort of human art
like oil spill. That's right. Great. And then there were 10 roaming affinity groups that shut down the 44 Chase branches. And I think that it caused a pretty big effect. It actually made people kind of stand up and take notice, and people started pulling their money out of Chase Bank and investing it into smaller banks, local credit unions. And this is sort of the thing that if we all do, that would make a difference, right?
And I think the place to begin is just speaking about it publicly, right? I mean, right. I think that if you say it, if it remains unsaid, then it never gets said. No one understands it. But once we start talking about it, I think that already begins to deny people like Chase the social license, the permission to go keep doing this stuff. So, yeah.
And, you know, it's easy for them to – we've talked about this on shows before with Mary Anise Hegler's article, Anais Hegler's article, where she said it's easy to sort of – a lot of these corporations will say, well, it's about individual action. You need to, right, you know, make choices that are good
for
the environment.
Stop eating meat, right?
Right. You know, turn off your lights all the time. And it's time to turn that around and say, no way. You know, that's blue on black, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. You are the ones who need to be held accountable. We are going to – the action we're going to do is to start making you make better decisions. It's not us. We don't need to make better decisions. You need to make better decisions because you're the one who's causing the biggest problems. You are funding our planet's demise.
Absolutely. And McKibben makes the point that, you know, as the situation gets more and more dire, this is in some sense the Hail Mary pass, right, to try and go after these big corporations to get them to change their path. And it's because of the connection, and it's the next step. So, well, there you go. I think we should put it down there, Mariah. I think
I'm gonna go change my money, my bank right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, yes. I mean, I think McKibben's a genius. I gotta admit. I mean, guy. I wish I was like him. Anyway, what we'll do is we'll put up links. Certainly, so the New Yorker article you can find, right? Easy enough. Bill McKibben. I think it's called "Money is the Oxygen Which the Fire Which fires global warming, but
the fire of global warming burns.
Okay. We'll put up links to it, but it's an interesting, easy to find thing. That'll be at the blog, massclimateaction.org/blog. You can find us on Facebook at /massclimateaction. You can send an email with your suggestion about how to slow down the finance industry to podcast@massclimateaction.net. You can listen to our show directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, SoundCloud, etc., etc. We want to thank D.R. Tucker for his continuous research support. And we want to close the way we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability, that we recognize we accept responsibility for building a durable future, quote-unquote, air quotes, by making the banks do the right thing, building a durable future by making the banks do the right thing, and because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out, we must insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our collective future. So, Mariah, thank you so much for being here.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk to you again real soon. Take care. Bye-bye.
Very cool.